Welcome back to another episode of our employment series with my dad in the studio today. So a little recap before we get into it. This episode is a nice little bite-sized episode. So I'll give you guys a quick little recap. I celebrated turning 23. I'm old now. Hopefully still feeling young and looking fresh. So celebrated 23. Honestly, I didn't do too much for it. I got my hair done, which is a ritual that I do every birthday, and I've gone natural, guys. I'm embracing the natural hair. I'm feeling very brunette at the moment, entering a new era of my life. Dale's over there sitting at me, laughing at me, going, "What the hell are you talking about?" Girls will get it. You can just move along, mate. Did that, and then had a nice little girls' day. Booked in another. Did not need it, but hair blow dry and style with my best friend Chloe. She wanted to just do a nice little girls' morning, so that was really fun. And then had a family night at the football because footy's back, so go the Cowboys. Unfortunately, I can only make two of the games this year because of the tour coming up, which I know I keep saying that I'm going to address, but it takes like a good 15 minutes to talk about, so I need to find an episode that has a little bit of time to talk about it. But if you guys do want a bit of insight, I do have a YouTube channel coming in the next couple of weeks, and you can go to my Instagram. There is a post somewhere in there explaining it all. So we will talk about that very soon, I promise, because it's going to mean a bit of a change for the podcast later in the year. But anyways, today we have my dad back in the studio, and we're talking about questions to ask a prospective employer. So when you enter into an interview room, what can you be asking the employer, the company, and what should you be expecting from them, I suppose. So this one kind of stemmed from a conversation that we had with one of our students in our office. And yeah, I feel like I just was like, oh my goodness, this needs to be a podcast topic because so many people have these questions. It's kind of that thing that your teachers used to talk about in school, like put up your hand and ask the question, because if you're thinking it, then there's probably someone else in the room that's thinking it. So that's what I feel like with this episode. And I was just really eager to get in and record it. So enjoy it. And I will see you guys next week. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard Aviatrix Airwaves. Please do not turn off your electrical equipment, which you are listening to this podcast on. And instead, just sit back, relax and enjoy as we are about to take off into this episode. Thank you for joining us in the studio again for our back-to-back episodes talking all things employment. Today we're going to be talking a little bit about what you should be asking a prospective employer. So the whole idea for this podcast topic came actually from one of our students who was in our office a couple of weeks ago, kind of feeling a bit flustered, and she was asking if she should accept a job from a company who was asking her to essentially fly for free. So we've seen this a little bit where people are saying, you know, instead of paying you, we'll give you flying hours, because as a beginner pilot, a lot of people know that those first flying hours are essential. And it kind of sparked a little thought in my brain that a lot of people go into interviews with the assumption that, you know, it's a get what you can take type of vibe, and it's whatever the employer says goes. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you have every right to ask questions throughout an interview because it's a two-way street. The employer needs to see if you're fitted for the job. You need to see yourself if you're fit for the job, and also if it's something that's going to work for your lifestyle and for your future goals. So let's go back to this whole flying for free thing that operators seem to be playing on a bit these days. Firstly, why do they do it? Can they be doing it? And should you be accepting that for your first job or for any job?
Okay, this flying for free gig has been around as long as I've been flying. My personal opinion is you should not be flying for free.
Yep.
Plenty of companies will ask you to do that because of that, of just what you've said, that you're thought that you're going to get hours, but you're worth something right from the get-go. And if a company can't pay you to fly, then I'd be looking deeper into that company about their income stream and what have you. So everyone has a value. Flying for free is okay if someone says to you, if you know somebody and they want you to do a ferry, you know, say a nice long ferry from, and you haven't got a job, and someone says, I want you to bring a aircraft over from Perth for me, are you up for that? I think that's fair enough. You're getting a lot of hours. You know, you haven't got employment, but so doing a bit of that, I don't think, as long as they're paying for your motels and everything and your meals and all that, I don't think that's too bad every so often. But if someone says, and I don't think it's, you know, when you enter into an employment agreement, there's a lot of conditions around that agreement, and one of them is remuneration according to the Fair Work Act.
Explain that.
So every job, whether it's aviation or whatever you do, you've the wage or the salary and the conditions is dictated by the conditions under the Fair Work Act. So you can't just go up to somebody and say, I'll pay you this much. Will you accept that? Mm-hmm. They've got a right then to go to, you know, to go to somebody and say, you've been underpaying me, and you see those sort of things all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the companies should pay you what you're worth.
From the start.
Yeah, right from the start, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And minimum requirements, they seem to be a burden to beginner pilots. This is why, you know, people are accepting these jobs that are for free, we say lightly. Now, yeah, it's the biggest burden. It's the biggest roadblock. What are your minimum requirements, and is there any flexibility around this?
Look, the easiest way to answer that is there is no minimums as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you fly and et cetera, et cetera. But the biggest roadblock is insurance. Mm-hmm. Sadly, insurance rules the world in anything, and in aviation insurance is a very restrictive model. So every aircraft we fly, these insurance companies put a minimum hours on it, so total time or time on type, and that can be, we've just argued the hours down actually the other day. They had minimums of, I think on the fixed wing side of 1,000 hours total time and this sort of stuff, and that's just, the whole industry has changed, so that's just completely restrictive. So that's the roadblock more than what I personally as a company owner or mm-hmm. someone else would put on them. I mean, you started as a junior pilot with no hours and, mm-hmm. you know, we put you into jobs that were, you know, the joy flight jobs and that sort of thing that
mm-hmm.
you could handle. And but, yeah, so for mine, once again, insurance, that's mm-hmm. a restrictor.
Yeah, so frequent flyers, when you are applying for that job and you think, oh, why is this company... You know, why do they have 500 hours, and, you know, surely they'll accept me with lower hours. You know, I'm just going to put my resume forward just to see in case. Those minimum hours aren't just because they're, I mean, I guess it is part of it because they're being picky and they want someone fitted for the role, but it is usually because of the insurance, as you were saying.
Absolutely. A lot of people, not so much the charter companies, but a lot of people self-insure. For whatever reason, it generally is because the insurance is so expensive. So those companies, it'll be just their own personal minimums. For argument's sake, if it's a mustering company that's self-insured, then and you've got a background in mustering, they'll pull you on, and there won't be, obviously, the backside of that is if something happens, then that owner's got to foot the bill rather than the insurance company.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So... if you're sitting in that room and you're in front of a company that you want to work for, you got to think about your future and what's important to you. What are some questions you can ask to ensure that the career that you are being presented with is progressing towards your long-term goals? What are some questions you should be asking?
Well, once again, it goes back to that doing the research on the company.
Mm-hmm.
Most companies highlight what aircraft they have and what their capability is. So, it's, I think you've got to go in with an open mind, and if you're given the job, yahoo for you, you know. some of the questions you'd ask employers, what is the progression? Like, am I going to be stuck in an R22 for 5 years or 6 years when you've got squirrels and long ranges there? Or so as an employer, I want to see how you progress. There's no givens in this interview. Just because you've been here for whatever time, 2 or 3 years, you mightn't show the skills to get into the bigger machines. And if an employer is honest with you, they'll give you those performance reviews and along the way. Hopefully your skills and how you present yourself at first up all match with what the employer expected of you. So generally there's progression. So yeah, you can ask the, you know, what am I going to be doing in 3 years if I've got the skills?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll generally tell you.
Yeah. So this topic's quite interesting to me because, I mean, I say this lightly, but it's family business. I didn't have to go through the interview process in aviation, which I'm sure you interview me every day at home anyways to see if I'm fit for the job.
Yep.
But there's things talking about bonding agreements and all that sort of stuff. What are bonding agreements and should you be asking about them?
Yeah, you should be asking about them. A bonding agreement is an agreement between an employee and employer when the employer offers to pay for an upgrade in your skills. So for argument's sake, if I offer you to train you as an instructor,
yep,
I'll do that at my cost, but there'll be an agreement drawn up between employee and employer that you give me a certain amount of service because I've just outlaid this money.
Yeah.
They're fairly common. They weren't...
I was just about to ask, is that what most people are doing? Are they levelling up their pilots themselves or is it still a, if you want to level up, go out and do it yourself?
Look, I can't speak for any other companies. I think if you value an employee and you're really... then you're going to offer that to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of protecting yourself. Let's say for argument's sake you had 10 pilots and you said, I'll give you all an upgrade. Well, that's a substantial amount of money.
Yeah.
Outlawed. So if I'm going to do that and give you the ability to upgrade your skills, then I want a little bit in return. So it's fairly common. I don't think it's that common for low-cost stuff. But certainly when you're starting to get into these tens of thousands of dollars, then you're going to have a bond agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I know some of the fixed-wing companies, when they're giving, say, a King Air endorsement, which is a mid-sized aircraft but costs a lot of money, then they'll bond those people for those pilots for 3 years.
Yes, actually, I think I have heard of some companies in fixed-wing doing that.
Yeah, and I stand corrected at this, but someone told me there was a sign-on fee for a charter company in America, like they were giving you like $400,000 as a sign-on fee.
Oh.
Yeah, what they didn't tell you that you're bonded for 10 years with them. So it's never one way for the employee or the employer.
Yep.
It's a mutual agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, and talking about costs, obviously you want to be earning in the job that you're going into. So is there any questions about costs that you should be asking, things that will pop up throughout your career and you want to know if you're paying for them or the employer?
Oh, look, I think it's a fair question. Every company's different. I can only talk for ours, but we... yeah, you could always ask my flight reviews, who pays for the flight reviews, who pays for the ASIC card, who pays for your medical. We don't pay for your medical, that's up to you. We don't pay for ASIC cards.
Mm-hmm.
We pay for, we'll do a flight review.
Yep.
For you.
Mm-hmm.
This company, our company, if you're ready for the turbine, I don't ask anything in return for that.
Mm-hmm.
I just... you know, you're ready, let's get you into the turbine. You can give back to me and I'll give back to you. So, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. And lastly, working as much as it shouldn't consume your whole life, we do spend majority of our time there. People like you who are running a business more than just majority of the time. So you want your day-to-day life to be something you wake up and feel motivated about. What can you ask to ensure that the job suits your lifestyle?
I guess you could ask, you should know,
mm-hmm.
you know, what through your research what that company does. But I suppose you should be asking, is there a lot of away work?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is all the work, am I going to be home every night? You've got to get a gauge of that. Like I personally knew what I was in for when I got into mustering. I knew I was going to be away forever
because
mm-hmm. I had a big insight into that side of things.
Yep.
But you don't want to go into a company and not have asked the question and all of a sudden find out that you're away for 4 weeks or 5 weeks at a time and you got your partner and or children at home without you. Mm-hmm. You've got to know that, and if that's suits your lifestyle, then tick that one off. if it's not something you want to do, then there's your answer, your question answered, you know.
Yeah, so checking what your roster will be like.
Yeah, absolutely. Really. I mean, generally when you get into airlines and even regional airlines, they know what they're doing from day to day. The general aviation side, especially our little business, it's very versatile and, you know, it's a lot of the time it's day by day. Our ops manager will get a phone call, can you quote for this job, and then we won't know, and all of a sudden, okay, there's a job on tomorrow. And that's the excitement of it a little bit, I think, is it's just not every day is the same day. Everything's different, and I think that's what makes me get up and come to work, you know.
Yeah, I love that because I think every pilot that I have interviewed or anyone in the aviation industry that I've interviewed, we all say the same thing, and that it's every day is different. So, you know, there's always new opportunities around the corner or new exciting things, new journeys that you get to go into. I will quickly actually talk on award wage versus contract because we did have an aviatrix quite some time ago who was wanting to move to Australia who was presented with contract work. Can we talk a little bit about award wage versus contract before we finish up?
Yeah, it's a very complex field, contracting. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people. So a contractor, one of the main things about a contract has to have their own insurance. So when you're an employee, the company will have all the insurances that cover you.
Yeah.
Indemnity insurance and, you know, accident insurance and all that. So if you're a contractor, then you've got to have your own insurances. I wouldn't hire a contractor if they didn't have insurance. The other thing that a lot of people don't realise and a lot of people don't do, a lot of companies don't do, is they're committed to paying superannuation to a contractor. So a lot of companies, I believe, don't do that, and contractors aren't aware that they should be getting paid that super, and that's contradictory to the ATO, to the taxation department. So there's all these other conditions around contracting. The true definition of contracting is you're supposed to supply all your own gear and all your own equipment. You can't employ people to replace you. You can grow, say you've got a contracting business, you can grow your business, not the business you're contracted to. Mm-hmm. So as an employee, you're meant to be there for the benefit of the business and grow that business's outlook.
Yeah.
So there's a difference. So there's a few differences with contracts. A contractor, I don't know the answer to this. I don't know if they're dictated to by the Fair Work Act.
How do you know what a genuine contractor will look like then?
Oh, they'll have their own gear. They'll have an ABN. Mm-hmm. They'll dictate what hours they do and where they do that. Mm-hmm. They'll dictate the rate. Not dictate, but they certainly put the rate forward.
Yeah.
And then you've got to accept that or not accept it, I guess. Mm-hmm. Not in the piloting world, we don't use contractors, but there's a lot of contractors out there. I think you've just got to go and research. I don't go any further than that with my knowledge of it.
Yeah.
A good example is like our bookkeeper, Angela. She's a contractor. Mm-hmm. But she has all her own gears, dictates where she works from, what she does. So, yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. So for our frequent flyers out there who are ready to go into their first interview, do you have any other advice for them?
From a
business owner's perspective.
I guess I've said before what I wanted to say, it's be prepared. I have too many people. I think be prepared and arrange an interview.
Yeah.
Cold calling off the street, I'm not a fan of it. It takes me away from a job. I feel like this person's made the effort to come to the company. Now I feel that I've been put in a place, I've got to go and show some face and see this person where... And I might be busy, and I don't like if people may have made the effort to come in, you know, and then I feel I need to make the effort to go and see them. So
yeah.
I think the best thing to do is ring up and organise an interview, a set time, and then that person can give you the time.
Yeah, what Tim was kind of speaking about last week is you don't know what that business has got on that day.
Exactly.
You don't know what the CEO or the boss of that business has got on, if they've got meetings, if they've had a really terrible morning and they don't want to talk to anyone about it, or they've just had a staff member leave and they're not really interested in talking to anyone else about jobs in that moment. So, yeah, doing your research, organising a time is a really good tip.
Yeah.
Dad, thanks for joining us in the studio again today for our back-to-back episodes talking all things employment. Of course, as we say every week, if any of the frequent flyers have any questions for about anything aviation, lifestyle, travel related, you guys know where to find us. Send it through. If you want another guest in on the podcast, then let me know and we can arrange that for you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much for having us, Georgie.